Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and Em, the podcast where we discuss mental health from a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started, we are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome, but encourage you to message us with criticism and correction. Let's get started. All right, our small business shout out today. Some nice people that I just met at a social event last night. It's Beis Hillel Logan Square. So Beis Hillel is Hillel is a Jewish. It's normally on college campuses. But like a Jewish student center, but this Beis Hillel is for people in their 20s and 30s. So they have different ones around the city. The one that we're going to promote today is in Logan Square. So it's a Jonathan, he's the rabbi, and his wife. They do meals, classes, groups, holiday related learning. Jonathan is very happy to meet anyone for a coffee and tell you more. Let me just pull up their Instagram. They just followed us last night and we followed them back. Rabbi, chef, teacher, learner, host, Logan Square, Chicago, Illinois. Rabbi JonathanPosner.com. Or metrochicagohillel.org/BaisLGSQ. And they have a link tree to all of their programs, their website, everywhere you can get information. Their Instagram is Beis_LGSQ. And if you'd like to reach out to Jonathan, his email is rabbijonathanlev@gmail.com. And now a quick ad.
Okay, we're back. Today we have another guest that comes from Mind Chicago, which is located in Chicago, Illinois. We've had a few guests from them on before, and we have some more upcoming, and they've been a great partnership to have. Sort of therapist, supporting therapist. We really appreciate that. So our guest today, Nikki Aquino, is an individual, group, and family therapist and community outreach coordinator at Mind Chicago, as well as a part-time lecturer at the University of Chicago. Mind Chicago is an outpatient practice that specializes in evidence-based therapy for youth, young adults, and families. She has authored and co-authored publications on various topics, including inclusivity, social justice, and trauma-informed treatment. Nikki also has a background in improv and theater, which she uses in her work with clients. For more information on Nikki and Mind Chicago, make sure to follow them on Instagram and subscribe to their newsletter by visiting mindchicago.com. And as always, all of that contact and social media information will be on our Instagram for you guys. So thank you so much, Nikki, for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. We've been excited for weeks.
I know. We scheduled this for, you know, a while. So glad that it finally happened. We were all like, woo, about the improv and theater because I do community theater. And Emily does improv at Second City.
I'm in improv level 4 and I'm having fun. It's nerve-wracking. I have no theater experience, so it's just been a journey for me, but that's so cool though that you integrated into your practice. That's
yeah, really thank fun. You. It's very fun to do. Very rewarding.
Yeah. Cool. So today you're here to talk to us about your experience and then sort of what it's like in general, especially in this climate, being a therapist of color. So would you tell us a little bit first about sort of your your approach to therapy and, you know, your personal sort of direction that you go in with therapy. Like, what's your, not modality, but I guess what's your, I don't want to say mission statement, but you know, that's,
ooh, I like that.
Yeah. I mean, corporate to me, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the most important thing to me is building the relationship. I love that I get to work with families. So I'll work with the child individually. And then a lot of times I'll work with the parents individually, and sometimes we'll do it all together. So it's fun to be able to see the family system from all the different dynamics and, be almost like a translator, mm-hmm. because, you know, kids don't hear parents, parents don't hear kids. And sometimes it's just pointing out like, hey, we all have the same goals. And then in terms of like theory and practices, big into DBT, I really adhere to the biosocial model of, you know, it's biology and environment, and combining all of those together to produce whoever you're working with at the time. Mm-hmm. I find that it can be very validating for the client, especially my adolescents and young adults who are like, why am I like this? Why am I so emotional? It's like, well, because you are, and that's okay.
And that's okay. Yeah. Because it's not a bad thing to be emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, cool.
So yeah, I guess that's my mission statement.
Okay.
Love it.
So what is, would you share a little bit of your personal experience, being a therapist of color, what that's been like for you, in what ways it has, influenced, if any, your practice, and, just, you know, anything else along those lines that you feel comfortable sharing?
Yeah. So, I'm Filipino and, also Italian. So I kind of, I get told I look ambiguous, which, in itself is erasure, right? Mm-hmm. It's taking away what I identify and my culture. It's easier for other people to say, and I think we run into that a lot. Side note. So in terms of it affecting my journey, so it kind of all started even in my grad school program. I had to do the part-time because I had to work. And so things like, you had limited, class opportunities because you could only do certain times. That final internship that you have to do full-time was really hard financially. And I still had to work a job. So, you know, working a job, internship, school. So that kind of sets, you know, the stage for kind of being, having extra struggle. And then when you get into actual practice, you're dealing with, you know, what comes with just being a person of color in a workplace. And then there are unique things to the therapy world that is influenced by it. Things like, you know, when I enter a space with a client who is white, there's a dynamic there that's different. And it's fun because a lot of my child clients, it doesn't matter. Cause you know, developmentally appropriately, it doesn't matter. But when I start working with adults and even into adolescence, it becomes a thing. And so in the last couple of years, I've started to really notice the dynamic I get from specifically with parents who, you know, are coming in with a lot of anxiety. You know, they're worried about their child. And so it's already a little bit of a defensiveness. And then when you throw on, you know, various other factors that are often associated with, you know, all I can think of is oppression, like oppressed communities. One thing that I've struggled with, especially in the last couple of years, is this concern or thought always in the back of my head of what am I being viewed as? Because like I said in the beginning, when people kind of say I'm ambiguous, that definitely changes things. And so trying to listen to that voice and also push that voice aside, because it is there, And it might not be impacting the therapeutic relationship at all, but it's an extra thing to be thinking about and be mindful of that is kind of unique to therapists of color. And it's really hard to explain. I have the colleagues I have who are also therapists of color, oftentimes we'll talk to each other and, you know, get consultation and then just say, I don't know, it felt weird. I can't say why. I felt weird and I felt uncomfortable. And there's kind of this common understanding that there are situations that are unique to therapists of color and don't have to be pinpointed. I think it's that whole thing of like, I must have, you know, evidence to say someone is being biased towards me. You know, they must be saying something or doing something. And that's not the case. It's oftentimes more unseen. It's those small kind of interactions that will build up, or you notice a response to it. And then you're like, why am I having this response? What just got said? You know, they didn't necessarily use a derogatory term, or they didn't necessarily say something extremely offensive, but for some reason I feel icky. And going to other therapists of color and be like, does that happen? Like, yeah, it does. Just that feeling of ickiness and not being able to name it. And it's okay that you can't name it. Like, it's still a valid feeling. It still has an impact on your practice.
Yeah. So we had, I wonder if this is kind of what you're describing. We did an episode on gaslighting and we talked about racial gaslighting. And how, a lot of people of color have experiences where they have that feeling that you're describing. And then, you know, white people are going to be like ask for evidence. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't believe you. Show me the proof.
Right.
And it's
right.
Like, well, maybe I don't actually have evidence. So is this even real? And then they feel like they're gaslit, but you know, to your point, there isn't always like a clear, like this interaction happened and this is why I felt this way. Sometimes it's just like a vibe you get. Is that kind of what?
Exactly. What you're describing? Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, it comes down to that kind of colonial culture that I think we're all trying to break apart. You have to prove it to feel it. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I don't have to prove it.
That was a good point, Emily. I forgot about that episode and I was like, oh yeah, we did talk about that, didn't we? Because I'm thinking like from the theoretical frame point of like CBT, right? If I had a client come to me and say, I think this person was acting a particular way against me because, then, you know, part of me would be like, okay, let's make sure, like, is this based in some reality? Is this, did they do? What did they say? And it would be easy as a white person to accidentally do that and invalidate someone's experience. And it's a good thing to keep in mind, I'm glad you brought that up, that like, this is not about any cognitive distortions or assuming or, you know, mind reading. This is part of the systemic oppression that people of color experience every day, their entire life. And so to not be able to verbalize exactly what it is, actually really makes a lot of sense because it's just always there. It's just a thing that's always there. And, you know, if you're explaining it to someone who doesn't understand it, then they're going to be like, what are you talking about? That's not it. But of course it's not for you because you don't live that every day. You know, it's like explaining a woman explaining to a man how it feels to be uncomfortable in an elevator with a man, you know, alone or something. And he's like, what? Why would you feel uncomfortable? So it's like, if you don't have that experience, you cannot, you can't get it. But it's mm-hmm. also not your place to ask someone to explain that, because mm-hmm. again, it can be gaslighting, it can be invalidating, and they don't have to prove anything to you. They're mm-hmm. just, this mm-hmm. is what happens. This is how it is. Mm-hmm.
And your point made me think of the, I know at least my experience of entering into primarily white spaces, I code switch like immediately and don't even recognize it. And that's part of what I've been trying to work on in the last year or so of like, I don't need to do that. I get to be who I am in this space. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, when I do code switch, I think some people are even more like, well, I don't see it. I don't see why you would, I don't see that being hurtful. I don't see why you seem fine. You seem mm-hmm. like just like us. It's like, yeah, because that's what I have to do. Yes, you're correct. I seem just like you. Yeah.
So yeah. Right. And for listeners who don't know, do you want to explain what code switching
yeah.
is? If listeners don't know?
Code switch for me means flipping your various aspects of yourself, your tone, your body language, you know, your vocabulary to fit whatever kind of group you are being in. And a lot of times it's, you know, flipping from your unique and natural essence into what is accepted in, you know, a colonial, primarily white space. So even just walking into the office, it's different. I change my posture, oftentimes change, you know, how I greet people. When I call to follow up on an inquiry about services, my voice is different because I feel that pull to, okay, professional means this. So I got to do this.
Mm-hmm. And oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, go for it.
Well, I want to differentiate for, you know, anyone that's going to be like, oh, well, I act differently around my friends and family than I do at work. This is not, that's not code switching. That's just, you know, normal, the way that normal people, you know, like that everyone has to like have like a professional self and like, you know, you're more personal, the way you act in personal settings, but code switching is to fit into spaces where you are expected to act a certain way, because if you act the way that your culture or your identity, if you act in that way, then you're seen as like, you get mm-hmm. what I'm saying. Maybe
yep.
you
can yeah. explain
it better yeah. than me. But yeah, that it's like to avoid racism. It's to avoid that facing that oppression. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to work, therefore I have to like put on a nice work outfit and like, you know, mm-hmm. act professional.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. Be a certain extension of yourself.
Yeah.
Versus be a different self.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Good. Yeah. Good distinction. Oh, I cannot talk today. Do you find, cause you said when you go into, you know, the room to see a client, do you find that there's code switching for you when it's a white client or white family, or, I mean, you still notice that you do that?
Mm-hmm. Which is another kind of difficulty hurdle that I know I'm currently experiencing of not seeing a lot of diversity in my clients for various reasons. You know, how mental health is viewed in different cultures, just like our location of our office, other kind of logistical constraints. So I don't get that break. You know, I don't get that moment of like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, that is also me having a huge assumption that my client would feel the same way I do, which again is another thing that, you know, you bring into the space of still having to be that removed entity. But me as a human being, I kind of naturally take a sigh of relief, feeling like I can be more of myself. But at the same time, like that's still somewhat not being me, because it's not being, you know, therapy me. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's complicated.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I sort, you know, I can kind of relate to some piece of that, obviously not because of, you know, my ethnicity or my race having to switch that, but there is that piece of like trying to separate the you from the therapist you and doing your job and being this conduit for the client. But then you also mm-hmm. have to hold that space of who you are. You can't just mm-hmm. completely ignore what you're feeling in session. Mm-hmm. And, but you know, it's sort of, it all goes back to this bigger picture, like the fact that you even feel that way. You know, mm-hmm. you even have to feel that or think that when you go mm-hmm. into a room. Yeah, maybe your clients there, they don't have any problem with having a therapist of color, but how are you going to know that? And if your experience up to this point has been that they're going to treat me differently, or maybe, you know, not think of me as professional, or sort of like what happens sometimes with like female doctors, like, oh, when's mm-hmm. the doctor going to come in? Like, I am the doctor, you know, mm-hmm. thinking of, you know, you're not the person they're there to see for whatever reason. If there wasn't this culture of oppression and systemic racism and just culture of racism, you wouldn't have to feel that way walking into a mm-hmm. therapy room, no matter mm-hmm. what the color that the client was. But mm-hmm. just that extra layer that you have to think about with every mm-hmm. client. And the fact that there's just more white people in the US, you are going to get more white clients, and that's going to be mm-hmm. something you have to experience every day, pretty much.
And how mm-hmm. you don't know, like, you know, like you said, Stephanie, like your client may, you know, you may not have any issue with that client, but there's no way you're going to know that. So you have probably have to enter into every new client with this, like carrying this weight with you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the default assumption mm-hmm. that you have to fight against. Like, okay, I am assuming this, I don't know it. And at the same time, it's understandable why I would assume it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the energy that must take, you know, we already have such a draining job, and then you have this like extra thing that you have to carry with you and worry about. And, you know, and it's more than just like something you have to worry about. It's like something you have to actively like protect yourself. Like it's mm-hmm. an act of protection, which is probably exhausting for you, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it until you get home and are like reflecting back on a session. Like, why was I so tired? That's why.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So in addition to those things, like what other barriers do therapists of color face from your experience or from what you've heard other people say?
Mm-hmm. Across the board in all fields, employment opportunities, right? Like that inherent bias that has been proven in so many different studies that people with, you know, ethnic sounding names or look different are less likely to get that job or to get that callback. It's also, you know, again, starting in school, where are the main social work schools located? What are the hours of classes? All of that is already limiting. So then you have a smaller group of people to pull from because, you know, your MSW holders are already biased or already influenced by things, right? And less accessible. Mm-hmm. And so then you go into who's licensed, because licensure is expensive.
Yes.
It's, you know, the license itself is expensive. Sitting for the exam, studying for the exam, study supervision. Classes for the exam, supervision. Yeah. So then it narrows the pool even more. So by the time you are looking for, or a practice is looking for a licensed clinician, there have been so many filters that have already limited access. There are so many places that there are barriers. So I think you know, having less opportunity and then just having less representation is really hard. I think there have been moments where there's been a question of would another person looking at me and they're thinking, if I hire a person of color, how will that impact the job that I'm hiring them for good or bad, right? And because some people are like, we really want diversity, and it's really, really great. And at the same time, you know, look at me, not just for the fact that I am, you know, multiracial, look at me and the fact that I am a seasoned clinician.
Mm-hmm.
And those are kind of the accessibility parts that come in. And then for, you know, being in the field, being a practicing clinician, it can sometimes feel lonely because there are, I don't want to say there are less of us, because it could be that I'm just not exposed to other clinicians of color. So there's that option too. Just my personal experience is I have less people who I can relate to in certain ways. I still am in primarily white spaces, and I do that because I want to do this job. I want to work with this population. I want to work with kids. I want to work with adolescents and parents. So do I tolerate being in spaces that are less diverse? I do. And then that itself is hard to reconcile in myself. Mm-hmm. Existential crisis all the time. But yeah.
Yeah.
Does that answer? I tend to go on very long.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think those points, you know, like you said, across the board, like employment opportunities, but then there's extra, you know, barrier specific to our field. Something else I wanted to ask you about. So I'm sure you've experienced microaggressions, mm-hmm. From white clients.
Mm-hmm.
And something I've heard some other colleagues who are therapists of color talk about that I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on is, like, you probably want to say something to them. Like if they make a microaggression or say something racist or, you know, but then you maybe worry that if you do say something, it will damage your relationship, or it mm-hmm. will not have this safe, like maintain this safe space that is our job to create for the client. So mm-hmm. having to grapple with, like, okay, well, they said something offensive to me and I mm-hmm. want to point that out to them, but will that affect them feeling safe with me? Is that something mm-hmm. that you can relate mm-hmm. to?
Yes, definitely had many of those experiences, and I'm still figuring out a way to deal with that. Mm-hmm. I default to trying to ignore it. I have not yet been at a place where I have, you know, pushed back on it or even highlighted it. And that is something I do want to work towards. It's really hard, and it's like a split second thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's hard too, is like, you have such a short time to really hear what the person said, take it in, think it through, and then respond to it. And for me, by the time I get to the response part, it's kind of been moved. So then I feel like, well, I can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
So that is definitely a problem. I unfortunately don't have any kind of answer or even experience of handling it in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause like, and then it's probably like, you know, you're processing this thing that was like hurtful to you that, your client said, while still having to be present and attuning to them and having to like manage that and balance that, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then feeling like kind of like you lost your opportunity after it, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. after it's like moved on, or, you know, after the conversation has
Right. Done.
Yeah.
It sounds. Mm-hmm. And if it's also like, depending on what they're telling you in that moment, like what the topic is about, it may be even more awkward to go like, okay, I know you're telling me this story about trauma, but I want to go back to what you said about like, you know, that can be hard. Yes. Like, it's not relevant at all to what they're talking about or what their treatment is. Mm-hmm. So then you have mm-hmm. to weigh, okay, is this the time to bring this up and challenge them and confront them and maybe help it, even though it's not your responsibility, it would maybe help them recognize that in themselves. Mm-hmm. But also like, you also have to do your job of like, why are they here? What were they being treated for? And mm-hmm. so, yeah, it happens so quickly. They've already moved on in the conversation. It's like, what, so how do you cope with those things? How being in a predominantly white space, code switching, and then realizing that you've done it and mm-hmm. having clients say things that are either blatantly racist or microaggressions or just treating you differently. Mm-hmm. And the exhaustion of that, how do you cope with that professionally so that you can keep doing this job that you love?
Mm-hmm. So I definitely just seek, not necessarily supervision, I seek out people in a community that I do feel comfortable with, just to talk through it and to get that validation that, yeah, you're right. That's what they said. And that's how I would feel. And it makes sense that that's how you would feel, which again is another, not kind of barrier of like, I have to then seek out my community. That's extra time outside, you know, what I do. And at the same time, that is what usually gives me the most fulfillment. Mm-hmm. I have wonderful colleagues who, you know, even acknowledge their own limitations and how they can support. And that is meaningful to me. And there's still something more that I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of journaling.
That's good. I mean, that is what journaling is. I don't do it personally just because I don't have the patience for it, but it is something that almost every time I recommend it to a client, they come back and they're like, that was so helpful. And I'm like, I know. So now I'm like, maybe mm-hmm. I should do it, but you know, it is good to, that's a place where you can put everything and there can be some reflection, but there's absolutely like, nobody has to know. There's no judgment in that. It is an entirely mm-hmm. safe space if you keep your journal locked and protected and you don't have anyone who's going to snoop.
Yes.
But yeah, so that just so you know, for you, it's having a safe place of your own that you can just say, mm-hmm. this is what happened. This is how it made me felt. I didn't know what to do about it, but you know, here we are and mm-hmm. other people, or at least either other people validating you or you being able to validate yourself. Like mm-hmm. that's okay. It happened and it's okay that you felt this way and you didn't know if you didn't know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
What advice would you give another person, you know, in your position or someone who wants to go into this field but is worried about that, mm-hmm. worried about being mm-hmm. the therapist of color with white clients or in a predominantly white space?
Mm-hmm. I think trust yourself, trust your gut and your instinct and know that that is correct. And be assertive, be aggressive in seeking what you need and be kind of cognizant of why do I feel this way? Whether it's with clients in the workplace and challenge. I have a hard time often with evidence-based practices because who created them? primarily white people, right? Who are they created for? It's often very specific populations. And it's hard to reconcile, like, boy, this works. This is scientifically proven to work. And I do not like this aspect. And that's okay. It is okay to challenge the norm. Therapy is a very unique field, an art, and there's space for everyone in it. And seek out friends, seek out a community, proactively do it. Because one thing that I wish I could go back on is not recognizing earlier on everything that was piling on and what it was making me feel like. And then now kind of being almost reactionary of let me find help. So from the get-go, you know, find your family, find a community, lean on resources. I can speak from my point of view of I am so willing and eager to support any young clinician of color because it is scary. And it's personal, it's unique. In some ways it's a common experience, and in others so personal. And your experience is your experience, and your experience is correct. And kind of like what we were all saying of, you don't need to have a reason to be upset. You don't need to have proof. And I think that's often where people get caught up of, am I overreacting? Or is this just, you know, is my client doing their best and they didn't mean that? It's like, that can be true. And they could have said something really harmful.
That's that DBT you're talking about.
I was just going to say.
Both those things can be true.
Yeah. Because a lot of times people will try to say like, well, I shouldn't be upset because they didn't mean it, or they didn't know any better, or they weren't intentionally trying to hurt me. But like you just said, that can be true. And your own reactions are still true and valid. I really love that, you know, that, you know, encouraging others to just to trust your experience, because it's your experience is your experience. And, as you've described, like so many people in these situations are just constantly like trying to like rationalize it, or like, say like, no, that didn't really happen. But if you felt it, then it happened.
And I like to say, don't settle. Don't settle for enduring racism. Don't settle for going into a space and feeling like you have to be different. And that's very hard to do when you're just fresh out of college and trying to find employment, just needing a job. So part of it is you learn it as you go. For people who are starting the journey, you know, don't fear it. Don't dread it. Be aware that it will come up. It'll show itself. And be ready to get that support and get that help. Don't feel like you have to go into a space expecting it, because maybe there's a magical world where this doesn't exist and you found it, and that's awesome. You know, statistically and, you know, anecdotally, I don't know of a place that that's the case. So being aware of how you're feeling and how it feels inside, and trusting and honoring and being aware of your experience, and that it is valid and true and honest and authentic and deserving of support.
Yeah. So on the flip side of that, what would you say to white clients that might have a therapist of color or might be thinking about going to see a therapist? And it's a person of color, and maybe they're worried in themselves, like, am I gonna say something that I don't know is gonna be upsetting, or maybe they're uncertain, they don't have a lot of interactions with different ethnicities and different races. Just like, what would you say from your experience would be good for them to keep in mind?
Ooh, great question. If you are having those anxieties and worries, likely something will happen. And be prepared to be wrong. Be prepared to get embarrassed. Be prepared to apologize and then let it go. Because one thing that is really hard is when someone apologizes for something, and then eventually I feel the need to be like, it's okay.
Right.
So apologize, and then that's it. And sit with that discomfort. I think just being aware of when I am questioning something as a client with my clinician, why am I questioning it? Because again, the question is valid. The anxiety is valid. Where is it coming from? Is the anxiety coming from, I worry that this person isn't competent? I worry that this person can't relate, or this person, I've gotten it before of, I was just worried that your culture would get in the way. That was a fun one to hear.
Interesting.
So, right. Which I'm like, I live through this world. So this isn't new.
Oh man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one of my top experiences. But yeah, if you're questioning that, then be aware.
Yeah. So be ready to be confronted with the fact that you have, you know, white fragility, or, you know, you have, this racism that is a part of the culture. It's part of you, whether you want it to be or not, it's there. And be ready. Yeah. Like you said, to sit with that discomfort. I think that's a really, really good point, because it is uncomfortable, especially if you're, if you don't want to be like that. You want to be, you know, you're well-meaning, but sitting with that discomfort is not going to kill you. You will be okay. Mm-hmm. You will live, you will continue to thrive, with your white privilege. So it's all right. But allow that discomfort to maybe be the moment of learning for you, of like, okay, I will not do that again. I will not say that. I will rethink these things. So yeah,
those and are put really in good. The work, put, yeah. put in the work to not be in that situation. Don't settle for being ready for it to happen. Put in the work to know how to navigate it and challenge yourself before doing anything.
Yes. Yeah. And I like what you pointed out, how often you might feel like compelled to be like, oh, it's okay, to ease their discomfort, but that's not your job. Like, you know, they, if they say something wrong, then they need to sit in the discomfort. Like a lot of people, you know, will apologize in hopes that you'll like ease their discomfort for them. But they might not get that, and they shouldn't have to get that. They should have to sit in the discomfort. That's the only way to grow and learn. Another question I wanted to ask, there has been lately, you know, more push for clinicians, white clinicians, to you know, learn more and become more competent at working with clients of color. And also, so if you had any thoughts on that, but also if you have any thoughts on how white clinicians can support clinicians of color.
Again, put in the work, right? I think therapists, we all want to believe and are truly, kind people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't stop there. You can mm-hmm. still be a kind person and do significant harm. And be ready to take a backseat. You know, you might not be able to fix the problem. I think that that is a natural pull. I had this really terrible experience. Oh, well, next time I can jump in. Or do you want me to take that client? Or, you know, that you could have done this. It's like, shh, just shush.
Shush.
Just shush. Just listen.
Uh-huh.
And be aware of what it will like, what it likely feels like for a person of color to be in a predominantly white space.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Don't necessarily assume anything, but deduce and be aware, and be ready to support that when you are called upon.
Mm-hmm.
The very eager, like white savior complex. Don't do that.
Yeah.
We're good. But like, be ready to support.
Uh-huh.
When yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. That is good. Like, you can feel for someone and you can want to support them, but like, if they didn't ask you to help them, don't assume that you would have the tools or the ability to help them and they wouldn't be able to help themselves. Like, that's mm-hmm. where it becomes offensive of like, oh, well, then I'll just step in and help. It's like, fuck, I got this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just telling you. And that's a very vulnerable place to be, even if it's a colleague, to tell in a majority white space, or tell a white clinician, like, my client who was white did this and made me feel like you're sharing this racial trauma that with them. And so take that with respect, mm-hmm. and, you know, give it the respect that it's owed of like, thank you for feeling that you could share that with me. And mm-hmm, you felt safe mm-hmm. enough to share that with me because you did not have to. So
mm-hmm.
yeah. Thank you so much for being on, and for, you know, you not only told us about your experience, but you gave us, professional and emotional labor in coming on and talking about this and, answering our questions and giving advice to people listening. And so that was very kind of you, you know, to do that. And we really, really appreciate that.
Yeah. So, and a lot of this, like you said, it's laborious, mm-hmm. I'm sure, you know, to talk about these things and very much, very much appreciated. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This has been lovely.
Well, that's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on wherever you get your podcasts. And we would also appreciate a rating and review.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. And that is with a period between each of those words. This is Steph.
And M.
And Nikki.
Signing off. Thanks for listening.